Recording.
The United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Mark A. Barnett presiding before court number 20-00071, Rebar Trade Action Coalition versus the United States et al. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
Sure, thank you. Jack Shane here on behalf of the Rebar Trade Action Coalition.
Morning.
Morning.
Ann Motto from the Department of Justice on behalf of the United States, and I have with me Mr. David Richardson from Department of Commerce. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. This is Leah Scarpelli with Errant Fox on behalf of ICDOSH, and I'm here with my colleague Matthew Nolan, also on behalf of ICDOSH.
Okay. Good morning.
Morning.
Morning, everyone. Thank you for joining. Excuse me. As you know, I have not issued questions in advance. I have read all of your briefs, and I think they sort of laid things out fairly clearly. But I'm always happy when folks want to get together and address additional issues that they think would be of benefit to the court. I am in almost all cases willing to accommodate. So, without further ado, let me turn to Mr. Shane. And I would ask again or remind you all that, and I have carefully read your briefs, and so please feel free to just focus on what you think are the most critical points for the court to consider at this juncture, and not otherwise repeat or read from your briefs. But with that, Mr. Shane.
Great. Thank you, Your Honor. Again, I'm Jack Shane here on behalf of plaintiff, the Rebar Trade Action Coalition. The court should remand the final results of the 2017-2018 review as Commerce's assessment of whether to calculate ICDOSH's margin using quarterly costs was flawed because Commerce treated the month of June 2018 as the equivalent of a full quarter in making its assessment. The agency's determination unreasonably depends on comparing costs across time periods of very disparate lengths. Commerce compared a 30-day period to 90-day periods, which is a completely lopsided and imbalanced comparison, and then provided no explanation for its deviation from past practice, where the agency has consistently and repeatedly refused to use monthly costs for this very purpose.
Well, why don't we focus first on that, this question of practice. What's the precise practice that you think exists and that you think you have established exists with respect to the department's cost analysis?
Sure, Your Honor. If you look at the cases that we've cited, the Mexican stainless case, pasta from Italy, the Korean pipe case, rebar from Turkey case. If you look at all of those cases, Commerce has said repeatedly and clearly in those cases that it does not use monthly costs in terms of determining whether to deviate from its standard sort of annual or period cost averages, specifically because monthly costs are prone to just isolated cost changes that aren't sustained over time.
Do any of those cases establish a practice that's relevant to the case that's before me today? I mean, I look at, the Mexican steel case, okay? Period of review, it's an annual review. It's not a first administrative review. Period of review is July 2007 to June 2008, 12 months. Okay, I look at the pasta from Italy, same period of review, 12 months. Look at Korean pipe, period of review there is December 2006 to November 2007, 12 months. I look at Turkish rebar case there, period of review is April 2006 to March 2007, 12 months. Commerce wasn't looking at what do we do with a leftover month in any of those cases. The analysis there was, Are we going to look at for the entire period of review? Are we going to look at quarterly averages, or are we going to look at monthly? And in fact, it wasn't, I'm not sure that it was even really truly argued to the department necessarily. I think the department was simply articulating what its standard practice is, and that is to deviate from a POR average. I mean, they focus on looking at quarters and whether there's distinctions within the quarters. But be that as it may, I don't know that any of those four cases tell me anything of relevance whatsoever about what the department's practice is when it has a period of review that is other than 12 months, and that where it doesn't evenly break down into 3-month quarters, and how it should deal with anything short of a full quarter within the POR.
So thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the question. I would respectfully disagree with that analysis. I think simply because you can divide, and you're absolutely correct, each one of those cases are divisible into even quarters, doesn't negate the fact, and I think it's more than just dicta. I mean, Commerce said in those cases that when you're looking at whether to change its standard analysis from an annual or period costing analysis, it looks to quarterly costs, specifically because monthly costs are unreliable because they can inherently reflect short-term cost fluctuations that aren't sustained over time. I think the fact
But did Commerce ignore quarterly costs in this case? I mean, are not five of the quarters, in fact, quarters? They didn't walk away and ignore the quarters. They used quarters to the extent that they could.
Yeah, so
they were true to their practice as much as they could be based on the facts.
Well, and so let me just finish on the four cases. I mean, the fact that the period of review or analysis is evenly divisible by quarters doesn't change the fact that Commerce has said a monthly analysis is inappropriate. And then, Your Honor, to your point about staying true to their sort of quarterly cost analysis, they did what they could here. Again, I would respectfully disagree with that. I would say that, in fact, they deviated from their standard practice. Two problems with what they did. One is comparing a 30-day period to 90-day periods simply logically, mathematically. I mean, that's an imbalanced.
They're not comparing aggregate figures. They're comparing per unit figures.
So. Well, they're comparing averages over those periods. Those are very
good. But it's a per unit average. So it's everything is put on the same basis. It's not as if they're comparing a 3-month aggregate spending on some input to 1-month aggregate spending on that input.
Sure, but you're still comparing time periods of very disparate.
What is inherently, I mean, to the extent that you're challenging the methodology, mm-hmm. you've got to establish that there's something essentially unreasonable about Commerce's methodology. And the fact that the average in one case is based on a 3-month period versus a 1-month period, what is inherently unreasonable about that?
Well, I think number one, they are completely disparate in terms of lengths of time. Just sort of expand your analogy. What if they did one day average and compare that to a quarter? They're still taking averages. I don't think that negates the fact that this is an imbalanced and inappropriate comparison. I think that's one chief problem. I think the other chief problem here is that, again, the fact that they are using a 30-day period, a 1-month period, cuts directly against those four cases that we just discussed. I mean, Commerce never addresses the fact that it said in all those four cases, monthly costs are inappropriate, specifically because they're inherently unreliable, because they can reflect short-term fluctuations in cost. Commerce never addresses that issue.
Right, which is why they don't do month to month to month, and they didn't do month to month to month. They used the largest periods that they had consistent with the question of a quarterly analysis, and they had 1 month left over.
Well, and so the question is why if you have a problem under those circumstances with using a monthly cost Why, well, all of a sudden, because you have a month left over, does that address the problem of the inherent issue of short-term cost fluctuations? You're capturing that within that month. And when you compare it to each of the quarters, you necessarily are going to.
Well, you started off here by telling me that Commerce acted inconsistent with its practice. Okay. You've got to establish that they have a practice. You haven't actually established a practice that's relevant here as to what they do with whether it's a 16th month or a 13th month or, you know, a 14th month for that matter, when they have two months extra out of quarters. Do you have anything else to support your notion that there is a practice here that Commerce acted inconsistent with?
Well, again, I mean, I would say the fact that in those cases, they specifically pointed out their practice of not using monthly costs is a practice.
All right. Do you have anything else? Do you have anything that suggests that what you're saying is when Commerce has something, a period of review that doesn't evenly divide into 3 month quarters, that Commerce does something other than just consider whatever the leftover time period is, whether it's one extra month or two extra months?
I would say that in addition to what we've already discussed, Your Honor, the fact is that this month, June 2018, has serious flaws to it. And
well, see, now you're talking, now you're on the specifics of the month and whether that's a substantial evidence issue in particular to June 2018. You're beyond the practice. So, I mean, so you don't have anything else in terms of.
Well, no, beyond the fact that they compare these disparate periods, as well as they used a monthly period here, in our view, there is an established practice, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. You want to go on to the specifics of what was unreasonable about June 2018?
Sure. So if you look at that month, we provided substantial evidence on the record to show that what occurred in that month was established that June 2018 was in fact an outlier. I mean, for example, if you take a look at scrap costs in the following months, in July and August of 2018, that demonstrates that, in fact, ICDAS's costs in June 2018 were isolated. They were not sustained over a reasonable length of time, which is exactly why Commerce doesn't use time-limited data in the first place.
Then didn't Commerce consider your arguments about scrap costs and basically say, well, you were comparing apples and oranges? I want to be cognizant of the fact that this is a public proceeding. I don't think anything on this issue is going to get touched. Well, I don't know that we have to get into the specific numbers. But you were basically comparing apples and oranges, that you were taking one price based on a particular source of input and comparing it to a lot of other stuff that it didn't necessarily need to have a one-to-one correlation to. And basically they considered your argument, they analyzed your argument, and they reasonably rejected your argument, explaining why they were rejecting it. What did you present to the agency that the agency failed to take into consideration that fairly detracts from their determination? I mean, please keep in mind the standard of review that I'm dealing with.
Sure.
I may agree with you completely. If I were the decision maker, I might otherwise think your argument is perfectly reasonable. That's not my standard. My standard is to review Commerce's determination and decide whether it was based on substantial evidence. And if they've dealt with your arguments, I don't reweigh them.
Understood, Your Honor. Yeah.
So what did they miss?
Yeah. So they missed a couple of things. One, Commerce argued that it couldn't incorporate non-period cost data into its dumping calculations. We never asked it to do that. What we said was you need to consider the record, the scrap pricing data, which showed that ICDAS's June 2018 cost experience was isolated to that single month. such that it was unusable in terms of comparing to costs across full quarters. I think just as importantly, Commerce argued that scrap was not the only factor contributing to ICDAS's cost experience. That may be true, but the record shows that it was a particularly important factor. In fact, if it's an interesting argument that Commerce is making here, because if you look in terms of precedent, if you look at the relevant cases, let's take pasta from Italy. In those cases, Commerce has explicitly noted that in terms of the quarterly cost methodology here, and it distinguishes this type of sort of substantial cost change from hyperinflationary economies, it says here in these types of cases, like our case, Commerce has explicitly noted that cost changes are driven typically by one or two main inputs. They don't say those have to be the only inputs. They say typically you've got one or two main inputs that are the cost drivers. That's exactly what we have here with regard to scrap. So Commerce saying, well, look, you know, we can discount scrap because, you know, look at these other things out here. Well,
in fact, didn't Commerce say that there are sort of three big cost drivers?
Well, I don't want to get into ATO right. information. But I would say if you look at the record, Your Honor, I think in terms of significance, you'll find that scrap is particularly significant. I would also note.
Well, my point, though, is that again, going back to the standard of review, though, I mean, they I think took account of your argument. And whereas you wanted to focus on one input as the driving factor, they said, well, we're not going to look at just that one input in isolation, because even if we, to the extent that we focus on main cost drivers, there's more than the one here. So we're trying to take account of all of it, the main ones.
Yeah, I would again respectfully disagree with that. I mean, I think if you look at the level, and again, it's hard for me to get into specifics here, Your Honor, but I would say if you look at the level of imported scrap, I think that's particularly significant. I think secondly, in terms of main cost drivers, the other argument Commerce made was, well, they also, you know, domestic scrap is also an issue, right? They also use domestic. Mm-hmm. So I think two issues with that. One is, if you look at the record evidence, it's clear that domestic scrap, and this isn't surprising because scrap is a globally traded commodity, closely follows what happens with imported scrap, one. Two, I still think that it doesn't undercut the relevance.
Wasn't there an issue there? I mean, I'm trying to remember exactly where it arose, where, I mean, part of your argument was based on, again, at sort of apples and oranges, where you were doing an analysis, but you based it on, I think, a US dollar set of prices and compared it to Turkish lira prices and failing to take into account.
Yeah, that's a separate issue, Your Honor. That's okay. That's not this issue.
And I'm happy
issue. Yeah, this is a completely separate issue about again, in terms of inputs, right? Mm-hmm. Commerce attempted to discount our imported scrap pricing analysis. In other words, what happened post period? They pointed to other inputs. Again, I think if you look at the cases that Commerce is sidestepping its appropriate analysis here and deviating from its practice without explanation. And then in terms of along the same lines, Commerce also specifically pointed to the fact that ICDAS uses domestic scrap. And so what I'm saying is that two problems with that. One is, if you look at the significance, again, I can't get into specific numbers, but of imported scrap, I think it's still clearly an issue there. And secondly, the fact of the matter is imported scrap and domestic scrap closely track one another. So you can see that in both those cases, prices went down post-review period.
Okay.
And then just in terms of sort of other points that we raised with regard to establishing that the June 2018 month was an outlier. I mean, we pointed to things, again, a lot of this is confidential, but I can say, you know, we pointed to input usage. We pointed to overall production experience. And then, Your Honor, to your point, we also pointed to divergence between ICDOS's cost of manufacturing experience in June 2018 to imported scrap prices. So Commerce in turn then relied on they cited ICDOS's analysis. I mean, I would point to two issues there. One, ICDOS's analysis did show a divergence. And if you make some basic mathematical corrections, I think the argument about divergence becomes even stronger. I would also note that below, before the agency, I think ICDOS's comment on this issue was particularly telling. And I'll quote, because I think it's quite important. This is what ICDOS said, quote, "A quarter in which only 1 month is included would necessarily be higher compared to a 3 month quarter in which any monthly divergence in prices is largely smoothed out," close quote. I mean, that's exactly our point, Your Honor, in terms of using 1 month, which can be very, the cost experience there can be quite isolated and not extended over a reasonable period of time. And that's exactly why Commerce does not use monthly costs. I mean, there are other alternatives it could have done. And what it did here was violative of its precedent in our view. Also, I would note that, you know, we're not saying that ICDOS's its cost experience in 2018, in June 2018, we're not saying it didn't accurately reflect their costs. That's not the point we're making. What we're saying is that you can't reasonably compare a single month to full quarter costs in terms of this analysis, because, as you know, Commerce has repeatedly and previously said, there's an inherent problem with using monthly cost analysis. So we think the fact that they deviated from their past practice without explanation, and in our view, use such a lopsided, imbalanced, and we think mathematically, statistically problematic comparison of, you know, different lengths of time in terms of costs, warrants a remand in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. All right, Ms. Motto.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. This court should sustain Commerce's final results because Commerce properly relied on all of ICDOS's cost data included in the period of review in determining whether quarterly costs are appropriate in this case. RTAC fails to show that Commerce's analysis is unsupported by substantial evidence or otherwise not in accordance with law. Instead, RTAC advocates for a rule that would require Commerce to disregard period of review data and cherry pick data that would better suit the outcome RTAC wants. Commerce thoroughly considered and rejected RTAC's arguments related to the June 2018 data, and this court should reject RTAC's invitation to reweigh the evidence and decide in the first instance that is reliable or distorted. Commerce's determination to rely on all of the data in the period of review is consistent with its past practice. It is predictable, it is transparent, and should be sustained. I'll first address RTAC's argument that Commerce deviated from past practice in relying on a partial quarter. This argument wasn't raised before Commerce, and RTAC therefore failed to exhaust its administrative remedies. In its preliminary comments, which are at tab 9 of the confidential appendix, RTAC conceded that Commerce has in fact previously relied on a partial quarter before. RTAC instead focused its arguments on, in this case, doing so would be inappropriate because the June data would skew the results. It argued the exact same thing in its case brief. So RTAC did not argue before Commerce that it deviated from a past practice, and this argument hasn't been exhausted. It would be inconsistent with Federal Circuit case law if RTAC were allowed to raise some but not all arguments before commerce. Boomerang Tube and Weishan Hongda Aquatic Food require RTAC to exhaust every single argument before commerce. But even if RTAC had exhausted the argument that commerce deviated from past practice, RTAC is wrong. Commerce didn't deviate from a past practice. As Mr. Shane and Your Honor discussed, Mexican stainless steel is not on point. Those cases, none of the cases that RTAC cites in its brief, pasta from Italy, Korean steel pipe, Mexican stainless steel, none of them included a period of review that couldn't be evenly divided. None of them included a period of review like this one that's an initial review that's 16 months long. So those proceedings don't, you know, speak at all to whether what commerce did here was correct. RTAC does not cite even one case where commerce relied on any period except the period of review when conducting a quarterly cost analysis. And commerce provided a reasonable explanation for including all of ICDOSH's POR data in its analysis. As it must, ICDOSH responded to commerce's questionnaires with all costs it incurred during the period of review. And commerce stated in its IDM, which is at tab 18 of the confidential appendix, that it, you know, it's the agency's practice to analyze the quarterly cost data based on the actual manufacturing costs incurred by the respondent in their normal books and records. The June 2018 costs were incurred in ICDOSH's normal books and records. And in response to RTAC's arguments related to scrap prices, commerce explicitly stated that it is the agency's practice in determining whether to use a shorter cost period. It's its practice to analyze cost of manufacturing during the period of review. And to support that statement, commerce cited to stainless steel plate and coils from Belgium. That's a 2008 administrative proceedings, and it's in footnote 30 of commerce's IDM. And that administrative proceeding is the preeminent prior administrative proceeding where commerce discussed in detail how in 2008, it sought to develop its shorter cost averaging methodology. And explicitly said in that administrative proceeding that because section 1677BB does not find the period costs must be measured, commerce typically uses the POR as the period under the statute, and that its standard practice is to examine whether the cost changes throughout the period of review were significant. So that has been commerce's practice at least since 2008 to rely on period of review data. So commerce did adequately explain why it relied on the June 2018 data, unless there is some reason not to. And this wasn't the first time commerce has relied on partial quarters. As we explain on page 11 of our brief, commerce has relied on partial quarters before in core from Taiwan, for example. And in that administrative proceeding, commerce did explain why it relies on a partial quarter. That administrative proceeding was a 13-month period of review. Commerce did the exact same thing it did here. It treated a 13 months as a quarter in its own right and increased the significance threshold accordingly.
Are there other cases besides corrosion resistant from Taiwan?
Not that I could find, Your Honor. I don't know, but presumably that's because.
Sorry, can you repeat what you started off at? I think initially you were, your audio wasn't coming through when you started to respond.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. No, I'm not aware of other administrative proceedings where commerce relied on a partial quarter. And I suspect that's because it is rare in the first instance where, you know, commerce does use quarterly costs. You know, their standard practice is to use annual costs. That is what they use most of the time, unless there's a reason not to. This case presents, one of the circumstances where commerce does deviate from its standard at annual POR. And on top of that being not as common, it's not as common to use a quarterly cost as opposed to annual. I think it's also less common what we're dealing with here, where there is a uneven period of review, where we're dealing with the initial review that's 16 months as opposed to one that's evenly dividable. But no, I wasn't able to find any other proceedings where commerce did that.
Let me ask you this. So, well, two things. I mean, number one, just to immediately follow up on that, then does one case make a practice?
Well, I think in core from Taiwan, Your Honor, commerce did explain you know, why it relies on an entire period of review and why it still relies on a partial quarter. And so in that case, it explained, you know, many of the arguments were raised in court in Taiwan. One of the parties argued that commerce should run pre-period of review costs instead. And they also tried to structure the periods in that case in a way that benefited them, much like RTAC does in this case. And Commerce rejected both suggestions in court from Taiwan. It reiterated that it calculates, you know, costs for market sales using costs only that were incurred during the period of review. And that when the period of review exceeds 1 year, Commerce defines quarters in the same way it does for a 12-month reporting period, where it starts with the first 3 months and it moves, you know, and then at the end, it might have a partial quarter. So I think Commerce does have a standard practice, an established practice of relying on data from the period of review. That is Commerce's standard practice. And here we have a 16-month period of review. And so Commerce relied on all of the data. And it considered all of RTAC's arguments, you know, maybe there would be a case that wouldn't be sufficiently, you know, reliable, but this isn't that case. It stuck with its consistent.
Okay. Let me ask you to come at it a different way. I mean, you, I think, probably rightfully said, I mean, this doesn't come up every day. It's unusual. You know, you only have a POR that is other than 12 months, generally, when you're talking about a first administrative review, then to have one that doesn't divide evenly means that you're doing something less than a year and a half, which is most common when the investigation's fully extended, et cetera, et cetera. But you started off by saying these are all times when Commerce has to look at and consider an exception to using average annual costs. What is the norm in a first administrative review when you're talking about a period of review greater than 12 months? The normal case, annual average costs. So if you have a 15-month first period of review or an 18-month first period of review, that do they look at the first 12 months as the first annual average cost, and then the remaining 3 months, 6 months, whatever the case may be that is within the period of review, do they use whatever the total average is as a second annual period of review average, or is there something different?
No, I believe it's the former, Your Honor. I believe that they will just use, you know, the presumption is they'll use their standard annual average cost for the entire period of review, regardless of whether it's 12 months, 15 months, 16 months.
Well, but that's not an annual. That's why, sure. See what I'm getting at here. My question is, what do you do when the POR is greater than a year and they're using annual averages? What's the norm?
You know, I don't know, but I would guess based off of reading these administrative proceedings that what they usually look at is cost of manufacturing during the period of review. And I think usually when they're looking at the period of review, it happens to be a year. So they're usually applying their annual cost averaging. But I believe it would be the period of review for cost of manufacturing, not, you know, annual. I see what Your Honor's point.
Okay. I mean, let me just leave that one out there. I mean, Mr. Shane, Ms. Scarpelli, if you could be thinking about that for when we get to you. I'm just, because I don't know the answer either. I don't remember what the norm is. I know they always say annual, and yet they also talk about POR averages. So go ahead.
I'm 99% sure it's period of review, just because that is what Commerce has, you know. That's the crux of our case, is that's what Commerce is looking at, period of review. But I don't know for 100% certainty.
Okay.
And so in this case, Commerce did adequately explain why it relied on the June 2018 data. And to the extent that RTAC wants to accuse Commerce of not going into some exhaustive discussion of its past practice, even though it did, it cited to, you know, steel coil plates from Belgium. It did cite in one footnote core from Taiwan. But to the extent Commerce can be, you know, accused of not getting into that past practice enough, it was because RTAC didn't raise that argument below. And so what Commerce was focusing on was RTAC's arguments related to the June 2018 data. And Commerce, you know, considered these arguments in detail and it exercised its expertise in denying those arguments. RTEC doesn't present any reason to overturn Commerce's analysis in this regard. The only question of the court is whether Commerce's decision was reasonable, and Commerce addressed in detail why it disagreed with RTEC's arguments. I'll just address a few of the ones that Mr. Shane referenced. He argues that, you know, Commerce should have relied on ICDA's scrap change, you know, scrap cost changes, because those scrap, you know, scrap costs were the driver of ICDA's cost experience. Commerce explicitly acknowledged that fluctuations in scrap costs impacted the changes in cost of manufacturing in this case, but it explained that, you know, its approach is to look at total cost of manufacturing, because that provides a more thorough analysis of changes in costs. So it did address RTEC's argument. And in fact, a very similar argument was rejected by this court in Habas, which is a 2019 case. Plaintiffs in that case similarly argued that Commerce should conduct its quarterly cost test using changes in the cost of primary inputs or total direct raw material costs instead of cost of manufacturing. Just like RTEC, the plaintiff in that case argued that, you know, the driver of its cost was primary material costs, and Commerce rejected invitation to change its analysis and instead relied on its consistent practice of analyzing total cost of manufacturing. So Commerce's reasoning here is just as reasonable as it was in Habas. RTEC also argues, you know, that if you look at the post period of review data, that ICDASH's cost of manufacturing changes would have been insufficient. You know, just from a 30,000 foot view, if you look at the chart on page 23 of ICDASH's brief, of RTEC's brief, you can see, Your Honor can see, that ICDASH's cost steadily and consistently rose during the period of review. So just from an objective standpoint, ICDASH's cost changes were sustained and consistent throughout the entire period of review. So it doesn't look like the June 2018 data was any different from the prior quarters. And this court in Habas, again, the same case, rejected a very similar argument. Plaintiffs in Habas did not deny necessarily that the cost data at issue failed to meet the threshold significance test, but instead, much like RTEC, argued that Commerce abused its discretion by using its standard cost of manufacturing test when a different test would have supported a different result. Well, that challenge is insufficient to show that an agency's methodology is unreasonable. Of course, if that were the rule, then every single, you know, respondent or domestic industry could come in and say, well, what about this data outside the period of review, if you would have considered that? But, you know, this court in Habas sustained Commerce's rejection of an argument like that. And, you know, just because looking at just scrap or looking at, you know, different period of review would yield different results doesn't show that Commerce's methodology is unreasonable. And then just to address the divergence arguments that were raised by Mr. Shane, on page 23 of its brief, RTEC presents a new chart, which purports to show that quarter six data diverges 8.6, well, diverges, I'm sorry, from the other quarters. You know, this chart, these numbers and this chart, this formula wasn't presented to Commerce. This is an entirely new chart. And so this court should consider this argument. But for the same reason, you know, even if RTEC had argued this argument, it fails to show that Commerce's final results are unreasonable for the same reason as its, you know, divergence analysis that Commerce addressed. Commerce disagrees, as it explained in its IDM, with the basic premise pushed by RTEC that changes in one input, scrap prices, imports, warrant against relying on the June 2018 data. Commerce acknowledged RTEC's argument and you know, adequately explained why it disagreed. And RTEC doesn't provide any reason why this court should overturn Commerce's analysis. Okay. And so I don't think I'll address the remaining arguments about the June 2018 data. We believe that Commerce adequately addressed them and that RTEC hasn't presented any reason to overturn Commerce's determination. Relying on data in the period of review is predictable, transparent, and fair. RTEC hasn't shown that Commerce has a previous practice that it deviated from, and Commerce's determination should be sustained and is in accordance with law. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Motto. Ms. Scarpelli.
Thank you, Your Honor. We fully concur with the government's arguments, so I'll keep things brief, but just want to emphasize a few key points as it pertains to ICDOSH. So in this case, RTAC takes issue with Commerce's reliance on data from the final month of the POR as a single quarter. The statute requires Commerce to rely on all POR data in its cost calculations. Nevertheless, RTAC asked Commerce to disregard this guidance and either ignore data inside the POR or rely on data outside the POR on the sole basis that the review period cannot be evenly divided into three-month quarters. It's worth repeating that ICDOSH did not select the POR in this review. The POR is fixed, and as parties to the review, we must take the facts as they lie. As an initial matter, Commerce's methodology for quarterly cost comparisons already accounts for the varying lengths of a POR and specifically requires a higher threshold percentage change where the POR exceeds 1 year. Whereas here, there are six quarters to consider, the change between quarters must be at least 37.5% compared to 25% for a four-quarter review period and 31.25% for a five-quarter review period. ICDOSH did not ask that the higher threshold be adjusted downward to account for the partial sixth quarter. Likewise, there's no need to shorten or lengthen the POR to adjust for differences in the duration of the final quarter. Next, RTAC claims that disregarding June 2018 data.
Yes, Ms. Scarpelli, I don't know if you've got any experience with, in other first PORs, when we're not getting into quarterly data and the POR is greater than 12 months, do you know what is what's the normal practice on that front?
My understanding is that it's the average POR costs. I tried to quickly do a little research, but I wasn't able to find anything to cite in the time since you raised that. But that's my understanding, and I would defer to Mr. Nolan, who's been doing this a bit longer than me.
Yeah, I hate to interject, Your Honor. I'm not supposed to be talking at all. I'm supposed to be mute. Right. But I think it is correct that in a longer period, you use the extended period costs. That would make sense because you have to account for all those costs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. All right. Sorry, Ms. Scarpelli.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Continue. Yep.
Sure. So it's been addressed, but I next want to just talk a bit about whether or not our tax arguments are consistent with Commerce's past findings. It's Commerce's well-established practice to rely on data covering the entirety of the POR. Commerce's general preference for use of full quarters is not inconsistent with the determination that it rely on partial quarter data where the POR can't be divided evenly into full three-month quarters. So there's no deviation from past practice in this case. Commerce has simply applied its standard quarterly cost analysis to a POR with unequal quarters, as it has done in past cases. So a true deviation would be for Commerce to ignore portions of reliable POR data or to rely on data from outside the POR in its quarterly cost analysis.
You talked about past cases, plural. I think, you know, I was talking with Ms. Motto about that question. Is there anything other than corrosion resistant from Taiwan?
So my apologies. So yeah, the case that we were able to find that addressed this issue was the corrosion resistant steel products case. The use of thresholds is also addressed in phosphor copper from Korea, but that deals more with the different percentages for different lengths. I think just due to the unique circumstances of the case, we weren't able to find any other precedent exactly on point.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So turning next to the claim whether or not ICDOSH advocated for cost reporting based on six quarters, which RTEC claims in its brief. ICDOSH did not advocate for the collection of data that couldn't be evenly divided into quarters. It was actually RTAC that originally argued that the collection of quarterly data should be without regard to actual calendar or fixed fiscal year quarters to be the most predictable and consistent approach. So it's disingenuous for RTAC to now take issue with the data collected when it argued for that method of collection in the first place. Though Commerce doesn't have to consider every piece of evidence on the record, this situation is clearly distinguishable from one where Commerce doesn't rely on redundant data it deems unnecessary to its calculation. Commerce is obligated to consider ICDOSH's reporting for the entire POR, even though doing so complicates its analysis and is less favorable to RTAC. The fact that RTAC doesn't like the outcome of Commerce's quarterly cost analysis doesn't invalidate the result. And the final point that I want to touch on regards the reliability of the June 28 data. ARTEC's points here are without merit. Commerce found that ICDOSH's reporting was reliable, and any arguments to the contrary are based on ARTEC's speculation. The POR did not cover July and August 2018, so ICDOSH did not report its material costs for those months. The publicly available prices of steel scrap in Turkey cannot be considered a reasonable proxy for ICDOSH's actual material costs and can't be used as a basis to speculate as to whether or not quarterly costs would have been justified if the POR were extended. Commerce's methodology properly ensured that all of ICDOSH's actual costs for the POR were included in its calculation. Even though ARTEC feels it would be more natural for Commerce to have disregarded the final month of the POR rather than treat that month as a full quarter, that's not the court's standard. Commerce's methodology was reasonable based on the record evidence and the length of the POR. As such, use of quarterly costs is supported by substantial evidence, and the change of the cost of manufacturing was well above Commerce's threshold. Because of that, ICDOSH experienced significant cost changes, and use of quarterly costs was appropriate in this case. Thank you, Your Honor. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Shane.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to follow up, my understanding is the same as ICDOSH's counsel, that in terms of the cost analysis, when it's beyond a year, it's done over the entire period.
First, does that mean anything to your, does that help or hurt your argument?
Well, I mean, I think, I'm not sure it either helps or hurts the argument. I think the problem is the other cases out there that talk about not using monthly costs, the fact that we've got weird things going on in June 2018, again, all undercut using that as a comparison to 90-day periods across the rest of the review period. So in taking on some of the government's and ICDOSH's arguments here, so first, the government argues that ARTEC somehow failed to exhaust any claim that Commerce's treatment of the June 2018 data was contrary to prior practice. I'm not sure how it gets there, quite frankly. If you take a look at our case brief, we cite the Mexican stainless steel case. We specifically talk about Commerce's rationale for not using monthly costs in terms of cost analysis, and say that Commerce's treatment in the prelim of the preliminary determination of ICDOSH's data was inconsistent with the precedent. So I'm not sure how we get to an exhaustion there. In terms of past cases, the only one we're aware of is the core from Taiwan case. And in terms of the government citing that as precedent, I mean, there's a number of problems with that. First, the government must be reading a different case than I read, because in that case, I don't see any discussion or analysis of using a 30-day period to compare against quarters and what that means, and how they get around the prior problems that Commerce talked about in using 30-day periods. There's none of that discussion in that case. Secondly, Commerce itself in this case did not cite that case as precedent for what they did in terms of comparing these cost periods of disparate lengths. They cited the case, but not for that proposition. So I would argue that the government's claim here is post hoc in terms of prior precedent. And again, if you look at prior precedent, in our view, it shows quite clearly that it's the opposite, that you don't use monthly data for purposes of this analysis as to whether to use quarterly costs. In terms of the Mexican stainless case, again, I would emphasize, yes, it was evenly divisible into full quarters, but that doesn't make the precedent irrelevant here. I mean, the fact that Commerce, and this isn't the only case, obviously, where they've addressed this issue, they have said repeatedly, we don't look at monthly costs because they're problematic. They can reflect isolated, limited cost changes that aren't extended over a reasonable period of time. The fact that you can evenly divide them into quarters doesn't make monthly cost data somehow less likely to show those sort of or contain those sort of outlier types of issues. In terms of,
I hear what you're saying, but I'm having a real difficult time buying it. To be perfectly honest with you, I want to give you a chance to make your best argument, because at the end of the day, I mean, the question is, what's the next best alternative? I mean, the next best, I mean, why is commerce unreasonable for saying, I mean, yeah, we do like quarters. We prefer quarters. We don't like doing monthly. But when we get one of these weird periods of review where it doesn't evenly work out, then, you know, we're stuck with picking among several bad options. Bad option one is we use the month. Bad option two is we ignore the month and just leave out part of the POR. Or bad option three is we take into account experience from outside the POR in it to make it an even quarter. But now you're talking about, in a case like this, you're talking 2/3 of that last quarter is not reflective of the respondent's experience during the period of review, but would in fact be reflective of their experience outside the period of review. And so among those three bad options, we pick option number one, and that is just hold our nose and use the last month. I have a hard time. I have a hard time seeing sort of where how your argument gets me within my standard of review to a conclusion that says that decision, that approach by commerce, leaving aside the specifics, okay, as a general methodology, first on the review of the methodology from the practice perspective, that is inherently unreasonable.
So, Your Honor, I would first say, I appreciate your analysis here. Commerce itself never went through that analysis, never made that discussion, never had that discussion, never discussed why here it made sense to deviate and use monthly cost and compare it to quarterly costs and what the alternatives were. It's not, you know, to the point about the Commerce Department being required to include that month, June 2018, in its cost, in its dumping calculation, we never argued that it shouldn't be included in the dumping calculation. All we're saying is that you should not have included it for purposes of deciding whether or not to use quarterly costs. Because again, Commerce's own prior discussions and cases that indicate that is problematic. Commerce never took that on, never discussed those priorities. Well, here, monthly may be problematic in general, but we had no choice. We had to use it, just in terms of method, it's a process and not getting into the problems that we pointed out with the data itself. Never got into that analysis. I mean, we're not arguing that for purposes of the dumping calculation, toss it out, never include it. That's not what we're saying. We're saying for the limited purpose of deciding whether to use quarterly costs, you should not have used this quarter because it's...
I'm not sure I see the big difference there, though, because if you're talking about, all right, it's home market sales for purposes of determining normal value, well, you're only going to look at those home market sales if they're in the ordinary course of trade. They're only in the ordinary course of trade if they're above the cost of production. And the question is, well, what's the cost that you're going to use to compare to determine if those home market sales are above cost? Well, is it an annual cost? Is it a POR average cost? Or is it a quarterly cost? I mean, it's all linked together. You can't just sort of say, well, we're really only arguing it for this one limited purpose. We're not saying, disregard it for all purposes. Well, you got to,
Well, so Your Honor, to that point, I mean, commerce's normal practice is to use full period costs, okay, right, where things are smoothed out over time. What we're saying is, if you do that here, that's what makes sense. If you deviate from your standard practice, which it doesn't usually do, unless you have significant cost changes, you shouldn't be artificially saying, well, this one month we're going to treat as a full quarter. And I just think mathematically, statistically, logically, it's an imbalanced comparison. it doesn't make sense. Right. So I do think there's a distinction there, Your Honor.
Okay. Did you want to get into any of the specific points about anything in reply on the June 28 data?
Yeah. So a couple of things there, Your Honor. So again, I want to repeat that we're not saying anything with the June 2018 data. We're not saying it's unreliable and that it doesn't capture accurately ICDOS's costs. We're just saying for the purposes of this test, it's inappropriate to include it. The government and ICDOS argued that our claim that the June 2018 costs were isolated is speculative. But I would say that's far from correct. We relied on record evidence regarding those costs to make our arguments, scrap pricing trends, the divergence issue, input usage, production volumes. It's in terms of the government's argument that ICDOS's manufacturing costs were not wholly dependent on scrap. You know, we're not cherry picking an issue here. The fact of the matter is scrap costs contributed significantly. And we think if Your Honor looks at the record, I think it's very informative, significantly to ICDOS's overall manufacturing costs. And again, I mean, in these types of cases, when Commerce looks at whether there's a significant cost change, and they distinguish this from the hyperinflationary methodology, what Commerce has said is it's usually one or two, you know, major inputs. That rationale is right on point here. And Commerce saying, well, there's other things out there, doesn't address that critical issue in terms of the significance of scrap costs. And again, the fact that they point to that there's, you know, ICDOS uses domestic scrap doesn't undercut that. I mean, it's still a significant contributor. Also, the fact of the matter is, as I said before, domestic and imported scrap prices track each other very closely. We're not exhausted on that argument. I mean, Commerce itself raised that issue in its final determination. We're allowed to address it. On the divergence issue, again, the fact that Commerce relied on ICDOS's analysis as to the divergence, and again, the fact of the matter is there is a divergence, even ICDOS and Commerce cited it. ICDOS's calculation was wrong. All this information on the record, the fact that we said it's wrong and here's how it's wrong, I'm not sure how that's, you know, an exhaustion issue for us. I mean, Commerce used it. We're allowed to say, no, the calculation you relied on, Commerce, is incorrect, and here's how it's incorrect. Even if you used ICDOS's information, it shows that there is a divergence, and if you make the corrections, it's even more significant. And then I would say just overall, again, it's proprietary, but if you look at input usage and these other things like the divergence and production volumes, all of those show that, you know, what we're dealing with here in June 2018 is sort of an isolated month, outlier month. Again, in addition to the process problems, Your Honor, that we talked about, I think those point to the fact that June 2018 was just an inappropriate month overall to use in Commerce's analysis for those reasons. I mean, again, I think it's particularly important if you look at what happened in July and August of 2018. When scrap prices went down, they are a significant driver of costs. That's relevant. We're not saying that you have to include that in the dumping calculation. We're just saying, I mean, these are globally traded commodity. We're just saying you need to pay attention to that. It shows exactly what you're concerned about.
It's outside the POR.
Yeah, there's plenty of times in Commerce you just say it outside the POR. So, I mean, it gets irrelevant for this analysis.
Not when they have data inside the POR. Not when they have data that what petitioners even concede is accurately reported inside the POR.
Yeah, we don't dispute that the cost of manufacture in June, Your Honor, 2018 is accurate.
Right.
Fact of the matter, it's not like commerce. I mean, commerce uses other data outside the PR. They use surrogate values, other things outside the
when PR. They don't have something contemporaneous, and that's under. I mean, that's you're going. That's a stretch to.
Well, I mean, you're on. My point is that we've got data that's directly relevant to the issue at hand here for commerce's analysis, and that is if you look at this data. It clearly shows that June 2018 was a deviation.
Okay. I mean, I think I understand your argument.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Anything else that we need to cover at this point for the good of the order? All right. I mean, I do appreciate everyone's time preparing for this. I think the briefs have been helpful to the court, and we'll take the case under advisement. Thank you all for joining today. Glad this worked out without any particular technological hitches, and stay safe, stay well, get your vaccine. Hopefully the day it won't be too far, before we're able to actually gather in the courtroom together in person again, but look forward to that day. But in the meantime, stay well, everybody. All right.
Thank you. Thank you as well. Take care.
Take care.